Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's R-E-B-A-G.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Fighting on Film, the War Movie Podcast. In this new weekly series, we'll be bringing you our review of Masters of the Air as each new episode drops.
Welcome back to Fighting on Film. Episode 1 and 2 of Masters of the Air dropped on the same day. So if you've not listened to episode 1 already, it's already there for you to enjoy. But we'll be talking about episode 2 from here on in. So if you haven't seen it yet, there are spoilers, you have been warned. But before we begin, don't forget you can get 10% off at checkout on airfix.com for the entirety of the run of Masters of the Air by using the code FOFPODCAST, that's all caps, one word, FOFPODCAST at checkout for 10% off any kit, any model kit you want. So from if it's a B-17 to a Wellington to maybe a Sherman tank, a Spitfire, get a lovely 10% discount courtesy of Airfix. Thank you very much, everyone at Airfix, for that. So, Matt, episode 2. There's some new characters.
It's here. There's new people. Things are going on. The story continues. I think production side of things hasn't evolved a great deal. Again, this one's directed by Cary Fukunaga and very ably is too. I think there's a couple of new characters for us to talk about. And
there are.
I like this episode because we kind of get characters grow a little bit and the cast expands a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
And it kind of begins to open up the series to other members of the wing. But do you want to go over some of the cast and then I'll talk a little bit about some of the cool visual effects people have been involved.
Yeah, of course. So there are three new main additions and they're not... One of them is not necessarily new. He was seen very briefly in episode 1, but he gets a lot more screen time in this episode. So, starting off with Rafferty Law, Jude Law's boy. He's the spitting image of his dad.
He is. I did not realise.
I didn't.
Until I did some research for the show. I was sat there watching it going, oh, he's quite good, isn't he? Oh, he looks young. That's quite fitting.
I was gobsmacked when I learned
for the
that.
Character. And then I was like, oh, it's Raff Law. It's Jude Law's boy.
Yeah, there we are. Yeah, exactly. He is playing Corporal Ken Lemons, who is the crew chief. He's obviously a British actor. He appeared in 2010's Repo Men and in a Russ tie with Ed Sheeran music video. So he's got a few credits to his name, but I think obviously Masters of the Air is going to be the breakout role for him.
Looks like it. Because he is good, actually.
No, he's very good, very good. And as we said last week, the crew representation in Masters of the Air is just really nice to see because I think in terms of aviation movies, they kind of are sort of put to the side. You know, they're famously very badly handled in Piece of Cake, the British series from the early 90s.
Yeah. Not too bad in Red Tails. We get a few nice scenes in Red Tails, for instance.
Method Man in that one, famously. Mm-hmm. Panamechanic. It'll be good. Good representation. But then we have, following on from Rafferty, we have a new commanding officer. He replaces Cole Hoogland. James Murray playing Colonel Chick Harding. He's another English actor. He's from Manchester. He was in All the King's Men in 1999. Most recently portrayed Prince Andrew in The Crown on Netflix. And he will soon be appearing as Colonel Spencer in the Kate Winslet Lee biopic.
Oh, really? Okay, that's exciting. Great.
Yeah, yeah. So look forward to seeing more of him later in the year.
Has a bit of a Brad Pitt delivery at times, doesn't
he? Does. There's a bit of Clooney about him, if you know what I mean. He's very 40, the pencil moustache.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like him. Very good role. And as with all of the actors, I think you'd be hard pressed to work out who was English and who wasn't, because the accent work is very, very good, I think.
That's fair, yeah.
Because going through the cast for this, I was surprised going, oh, no, he's actually British. Oh, he's Welsh. Like, wow. You know, I think it's a testament to the show that you lose yourself in the characters rather than thinking that's an accent. I think that's always a strength.
Yeah.
And then rounding out the new members this week, now obviously there are loads more characters in it, but we're just picking out the main ones. Nikolai Kinski playing Cole Hoogan, who exits with a burst ulcer. So there we go.
We didn't mention him last episode, but he is kind of like a kind of important character. He's the commanding officer of the unit, and he has that scene in the office with Bucky where he drinks a glass of milk, trying to calm his ulcer down. We find out later in episode 2 that it's an ulcer, and he coughs up a load of blood, and his XO is like, oh my God, are you all right? And he's like,
yeah,
fine, thanks, yeah. And then he kind of like vomits blood when they land after the mission.
That's it. Yeah.
And collapses.
They make it. I think Egan makes a comment saying he didn't like his flying, did he?
Yeah.
In the episode. Yeah.
That's a great scene where he says that, actually, where he's drunk with the new CO.
Yeah. I like that. It's very
some
good.
Good dialogue in that scene.
There is. So, I mean, getting into our thoughts on the episode, as we will do every week. These are going to be, as I mentioned in episode 1, looser reviews, because we do want you guys to go and see this, because I think it's one of those things that you're just going to want to see. I think I'm going to preface. Oh, sorry. I think I'm going to start my thoughts this week by saying the theme song really gives me chills every time I hear it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It really does. Like, it's just something about it, that the montage of the what's going on over it with the bombers and then the crewmen and things like that. Like, I really, really think it's very well done. It's up there.
Yeah,
I
it's
really
well
think
crafted.
It's good.
Yeah, I agree.
And the title card shot of the bomber on its own in the field, Master of the Air above it, really nice.
Yeah, you were saying that you thought it gave the montage gave a little bit too much away, weren't you, as well, before we started recording?
Yeah, like, even from episode 1, I'm like, well, what's going on here? What's going on there? And obviously, I can't say any more, but having seen the whole series, I'm thinking, oh, well, okay, this bit's that bit. But obviously, you don't know that going in. But I think it does give a nice overview to the people, and there are some nice evocative shots in there. But then it's also nice for viewers to see what's coming up and when's that bit from? When's that wall? What's that from? You know, I think it is a teaser as well, in a way.
And I guess in this day and age, it's almost an Easter egg, because the majority of people hit skip intro on
it's
a streamer,
true.
Won't they?
That is true, yeah.
So if you stick around to watch those credits, you're treated to some hints of what's coming up later in the series. Mm.
I wonder if there'll be a skip intro. They might not do it. You never know.
I don't know. We're recording this a week before the actual episode drops, so we haven't actually sat down and hit play on Apple TV itself, so we don't know.
Find out, won't we?
Most of them do, don't they?
They do. They really do. So episode 2 picks up straight after the end of episode 1. It starts in the medical and interrogation huts. Egan and Cleven checking the crews over as they give the recounts of the Bremen raid, check up on wounded crewmen, and we see Dickie the gunner, who's burnt his hand quite badly.
Oh yeah, from touching the top covers. I thought that was a really good inclusion. I said it, you know, when we talked about episode 1 earlier, and I think I really enjoyed that interrogation sequence of showing the process. That's something I wasn't aware of. You know, going into the show, I'd never actually been aware that that is how they did it. I assumed there was a debrief, but I didn't know they just threw them all into one hut, put them on a table, and like kind of ask them questions and
It's
stuff.
called the interrogation room for a reason,
Yeah.
you know.
But I really like that, and we, you know, mild spoiler, but we'll see more of that as the series goes on.
Yeah.
I also really liked the introduction of the medical officer and explaining that, you know, there's one airman that's urinated on himself while I think he was in a ball turret, so he's probably just couldn't get out. And he's like, we're losing too many guys to frostbite because they've, you know, so many thousand feet.
Yeah.
They're freezing and they're getting burns and they're losing crews.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's
Another one of
really,
those interesting aspects that has
yeah.
been sort of like feathered into the plot. I like
It's
it.
lovely. Like you're not only losing men to enemy action, but you're losing them to things as trivial as having a whiz. You know, I think it just hits home again how tough it was in the sky for these guys. You know, like what? Like not even like 30, 40 years since flight had been invented, like flight had been cemented as a thing. You know, I'm not saying it's invented flight, but you know what I mean. Like it's
I know.
incredible, isn't it? After that sequence, it picks up about 3 weeks after the Bremen raid, and we get this really nice Crosby narration who, as he comes and goes in the episodes, but he explains the role of the ground crew, and we're introduced to Lemon. Corporal Lemon. I think he becomes a sergeant later on, but he's a corporal.
Is he badged as a corporal when we see him in that episode, in this episode?
Yeah, because Crosby says Corporal Ken
He does, but
Lemons.
is he badged up? Because I swear on his tunic he's got the sergeant stripes.
Maybe he's just wearing it.
Maybe.
Because
Anyway, not that it matters.
there's a girl wearing an M41 jacket who I noticed when she was greeting the men after they came back, and she had loads of patches on the sleeve. So I wonder if
Oh
that's
yes, yeah.
something. I'm
Yeah,
not
I
sure what
saw
that
her.
was about. Maybe the chaps had given her
I
a
don't know.
patch,
She might
like.
have been. She might have been the U.S. equivalent of the WAF kind of thing.
Yeah, most probably. Most probably. And then during that sequence of Lemons, you're introduced to the towns the kids from the local town, and they're having a nice relationship, and he's like, he throws him a baked potato. And it's like, oh, just, you know, salt and pepper, just the way you like it. And I think that's nice because we get in the connection that the bomber crews did forge with the people of Thorpe's Abbot and obviously the bases that were around. And you also see all the people working on the airfield as well.
I really like the inclusion of the land girls moving like livestock through and that
Lovely.
kind of stuff. You see that during the just before the crash sequence,
Yeah.
because there's a fort crashes in the far distant background as Lemon's talking to the two little boys, and you're like, oh shit. And then
Yeah.
it cuts to the crash site, and they explain that they were on a training mission and they just didn't have enough speed and they went
It's
into a
stalled
turn and
out.
just crashed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's shocking. It really is. I really like that. I obviously say like it, but it really hits hard. It's, you know, again, it shows the dangers of it. You know, you can fall out the sky. You know, it's incredible to me. And then after that, I mean, I think we'll talk about it a little bit because it's the first One of the first instances of the show irking me.
I think people are going to have issues with it. UK viewers are going to
Yeah.
be a bit, I don't know, irked perhaps.
I
Maybe a
think
good
so.
word.
I think so. So there's a section where the Egan, Buck, the rest of the chaps, Curtis, they're all in a bar, in the pub, local pub, having a drink. And they're chatting to an RAF ground crew, and I'll cut a long story short. So with the RAF captain, I think he's a captain, he says, "Well, we bomb at night. Doesn't matter what we hit as long as it's German." And he just insinuates to the American crew that night bombing is better than day bombing, and you're losing all these crews because you're crazy flying at night. And Egan takes umbrage with that, and then they have a fight later on, and Curtis knocks out one of the British crews, and he says, "Who? Sorry," he says, "Curtis knocking the." Oh, sorry, he says, "I can hit the target at night now," and I thought it was a great line, nice
Yeah, it is a
payoff.
good line.
But that's not my problem with it. As a sequence, it's okay, but I think for me, the representation of the RAF crews, it's odd phrasing in what they're saying
I don't
because
know
they're.
whether they would have argued about that, you know.
I mean, quite possibly they may have. You know,
I
obviously.
mean, I'm sure given you know, the background of John Orloff, he's done his research. We already know that he's compiled a massive diary, you know,
of course,
a Bible for the show and such. And it's based on Miller's book. So it might be based on it, on an actual, you know, event where that
yeah.
kind of thing did happen. But
and not to
it
say
seems
that,
a little bit jarred, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and not to say that, you know, one RAF crew or three RAF mates in the same plane could have had an issue with the Americans doing what they were doing, I guess. But I think for me, it's a little bit overpaid, oversexed, over here stereotype.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is true.
It's a little bit like that for me. It just didn't sit right with me a little bit. I like, obviously, the payoff of Curtis getting his funny line in there. It's only like a maybe 5 minute sequence. It's very small in terms of the actual episode, but I think it's the first instance of where I'm like,
it's
think
an interesting
I think,
way to introduce the RAF. I'll be interested to see what kind of reaction that gets from like UK viewers and
I
such.
Do too.
So
I do
we'll
too.
see.
And then after we have Crosby doing some narration again, and he explains the differences between the United States Army Air Force and the Royal Air Force's difference in bombing campaign and strategy. And there is a line about night bombing being more indiscriminate or being more successful, depending on what uniform you wear. And I think for a context line in the context of the time, it's fine. I completely am fine with that. But I think I wonder how certain aspects of the history community and viewers are going to take this. But we have to remember, as with Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers, The Pacific, they're American stories for American audiences written by American writers. So I'm fine with that. Like, you know, we've had the discussion about Monty and the British only being mentioned once in Saving Private Ryan, but that was an American-made studio film for an American audience with American actors. So I can let it wash over me, but I completely get I get it, you know. Anything else before we talk about the raid?
I like the preparation sequence that leads off of that narration, where it shows all the support staff getting everything ready, you know, packing up kind of like ration packs and getting chutes ready, arming bombs, loading up the aircraft. I thought that was a really nice way of establishing and setting up you know, the raid. And then you don't need to show that again for other episodes, because if you go into this not really, you know, knowing a great deal about how bombing worked during the war, the show does a fairly good job actually of kind of educating you along the way.
Yeah, it does. It tells you enough. It has enough exposition in there from Crosby's narration to explain these things to you. Very surface level, but it's absolutely fine. And that montage for me as well is another instance of showing the ground crew at work, showing their invaluable work to get these guys in the sky. And you see the lovely shot that's in the opening sequence of them hauling a trolley of bombs up a ramp with a lovely shot behind them, and they're all silhouetted. I think that's a lovely, lovely shot. So yeah, moving on to the raid, which really is the meat of this episode yet again. So much like episode one.
Yeah, it's the climax.
It's the climax, but it comes in about 30 minutes in, I think, and it's a 20-25 minute sequence. It's quite a long thing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Pilot the Bombardier. Did you know you can join the Fighting On Film Patreon for as little as £2.50 per month? which includes a vote in the Patreon pick, exclusive podcast news, guest announcements, and a hell of a whole lot more. Now let's get this baby home.
So for the raid, the target for today is the Sub Pens in Trondheim, Norway. Another thing that I like about that is that we're seeing lots of different raids in lots of different areas. It's not just bombing Germany, it's bombing occupied territories as well, which is a very nice thing to see. Because you could have just picked all German raids if you wanted. You easily could have done as a writer. But I like the fact they're showing different areas, showing the air campaign. So Crosby becomes lead navigator for the wing after Bubbles falls ill. He's the lead navigator on the... was the lead navigator. So the 100th are leading the wing, and he gives Crosby his lucky snow globe. And that'll come up again in other episodes. But I think it's really nice. It's a nice introduction to Crosby, because I think we haven't seen tons of him.
We see him accidentally navigate to France.
Yeah.
You know, miss England and such. So we know he's not the most confident of navigators.
No.
We get a little introduction to him in the first episode.
We see a lot more of him in this one.
Yeah, as I said at the beginning of the episode, it kind of expands that base cast and kind of gives a bit of growth to the characters.
Yeah, it's nice.
There's a lot more exposition around his background and his family, that kind of thing, you know, his wife.
Mm.
But the raid is great. The raid is... The series does a good job of just kind of like ramping up the raids with each increment.
I think. 100%.
And the CGI is spectacular in scale in this particular episode. That shot of the bombs actually hitting the docks, the pens, is very really good.
Doesn't linger
really
on
good.
It either.
No.
Which it could if it wanted. It's nice. I just love the shot of when they're trying to, Crosby has some issues. He has a bit of flight air sickness. So he's combating that. And they're asking him to give like a map plot team point, or asking him to, if you know, when they're going to turn onto the target, when's the right time to do it. And he's, you know, fighting the air sickness, and then he looks out the turret window, he looks out of another window, and then he finally sees the smoke that the Germans have put up to mask the target, which luckily the wind's blowing it away from the pens. So he goes, oh, there you are, and he gives him the reference, and they all turn in, and you get this beautiful sweeping shot of it lingers on it for about 10 seconds, and it's just a wing of B-17s like curving, turning into the target. It's beautiful.
It's really well done.
You know, as I said last week, it's like, I didn't know if I said it last week, but it's Memphis Belle on steroids. It's just beautiful.
I would love
to
hear from the cinematographer for the series about whether they were influenced by all that great footage that was filmed during the war.
Without a doubt, you must be.
Because you can see it through. Yeah, you know, sometimes they'll look through one of the waste ports.
Yeah.
And it'll be like a nice little kind of off kilter shot of another fort.
Yeah.
Or some of the impacts on the ground. That sequence where they recreate. Well, where they depict the bombs landing in Trondheim is reminiscent of, you know, some of the views.
Well, it's
nose
like
the
shots from Wellman's Memphis Belle.
Yeah, exactly.
It is very much like that. There's some great outtakes of that on the American archive catalog, actually, if anyone wants to go and seek those out, because they're really interesting. There's a lot of stuff that didn't make it into Memphis Belle in 1943. The outtakes are really interesting. And I just wanted to drop that in there for B-17 fans. Anyway, so... Yeah, as you say, that raid is just breathtaking the way
it's spectacular.
Shot.
And I think this is probably a good place within the show to talk a little bit about the visual effects crew that's
yeah,
worked
please
on
do.
The show. There's too many to sort of break down individually of who worked on what, because when you look at the credits, there's over like 30 people that were involved in this by name, and half a dozen specialist VFX houses seem to have been involved. So principally we've got DNEG or DNEG. They've worked on stuff like Dune, For All Mankind, Aquaman, Oppenheimer, Devotion, Stranger Things, The Battle at Lake Changjin, The 800, Tenant, and Greyhound as well.
Okay. Yeah.
And most recently, The Shepherd. the Christmas
yes,
movie, the
the Disney
adaptation.
Plus one.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's right.
yeah.
And then Weta FX, probably best known for being founded by Peter Jackson for the Lord of the Rings films. They worked on District 9, The Tomorrow War, The King's Man, and I believe they're doing all the Avatar films, which I'm sure will
Okay.
look great. Whether they're great or not, it's debatable. And then we've
Yeah, we're not
got
Avatar fans, are we?
and we've got Rodeo FX, who worked on Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, Terminator Salvation, the most recent Mission Impossible movies, Paddington 2, Overlord, and and John Wick 4 as well. And then Whiskey Tree, who's worked on Andor, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Elysium, Rogue One, Distillery VFX, who also worked on Devotion, as well as Raised by Wolves and The Last of Us. And then we've got Helen Bunker from the House of Good Vibes, who's a VFX supervisor, I should say. And credits include Gravity, Sherlock Holmes, Last Night in Soho, and then rounding out these half a dozen quite respected VFX houses is East Side Effects, who have worked on films like Gemini Man, Triple Frontier, and The Ballad of Buster Scruggs as well. So there's a whole plethora of these really skilled VFX houses that have come together and worked on individual scenes throughout the series. They might not have all worked on this episode. There's some that worked on all of them. There's some that worked on just a couple. It seems like individuals and some of the companies were brought in to pick up slack where others and do different effects for different kind of scenes. And then one last one that a pretty important one to mention is Lux Machinima, who are responsible for all the on-set virtual production. So that's all those really cool new LCD screens, LED screens, not LCD screens, LED sort of backdrops that are being used a lot now. So they've been responsible for Barbie, Solo, The Irishman, Oblivion, Mandalorian, and Rogue One as well. So they give that really crisp background effect rather than having green screen.
I love how we've come full circle. Now we've got our own like digital back projection. I
Yeah,
love
it's
that in
quite
film. Yeah,
something, isn't it? Coming
we've
all the
just
way.
upgraded a proper old staple of filmmaking. We've just
Yeah.
made it amazing. I think they used that on The Mandalorian, didn't they, as well?
They did. They
They
did,
did
yeah.
that. I remember seeing it. Yeah. So it's hard to tell when that's on and when it's not. It is pretty seamless. I think there's some shots. Sorry. I think there's some shots that linger a little bit too long on certain bits.
I think the most telling, the most obvious perhaps one is actually in the next episode, which we'll talk about next week, during a particular raid. But it's very, on the whole, it's very effective. And I think the best use of that LED backdrop kind of technology is the cockpit scenes where you've got, one of the main characters is flying the ship. And then he'll turn and look over his shoulder out the window, and he'll see like either like the bomber stream forming up, or it's a fort going down, or it's a
I think
Messerschmitt coming in.
you could talk about in this raid. I think the further away a B-17 is to the main action, I think it could be that it could be what I'm watching it on. But sometimes they don't look as detailed. And I think that's just because they're further away,
Yeah,
perhaps.
I think
But that's
that's just
a
the nature of the business, isn't it?
extremely minute thing. Like it doesn't ruin the experience. Like the raids the raid in episode two is a visual treat. Like it just is, as it was in episode one. So I mean, I think that brings us in to the Ally Tally this week. What did you pick?
It's tough because not a lot jumps out, I'll be honest, because there's so much mise-en-scène going on around the film. I really liked Lemon's like ground crew uniform.
The overalls.
The overalls and the
Yeah, they're
cap
nice.
and
They're nice. They're very hipsterable. You could wear them now.
And one thing actually that stood out to me in those scenes with the little boys is one of them has a prosthetic little kind of like clamp hook type prosthetic, and I was my head canon for that is perhaps he's a evacuee and he was wounded
Perhaps.
in the Blitz. It's never explained. I don't think it's ever explained,
No, it's
but
not explained, but it's a nice,
he's seen it in a couple of scenes throughout the series, but
it's a nice bit of
it's an interesting
inclusion.
inclusion.
And those kids are cute as well. They have some
They
great
are, yeah.
dialogue.
And they're good actors actually, to be fair to them.
There's a bit where it hark it's a callback. So when when the young girl throws the baked potato at Lemons at the start, he goes, "Oh, that's one hot bastard." And then later on, they're burning off the oil from the airstrip, and they light a match and they burn it off. And the little girl standing with Lemons, she goes, "That's one hot bear. That's one hot bastard." No, it just made me chuckle. It's good. There are some really like funny lines when they need to be in this. For me this week, it's just a great look at the Norden bombsite being used.
That's a good one. That's a good choice.
Really actually, nice. Yeah. And Crosby mentions it, saying that, you know, it's probably one of the most important pieces of inventions of the war. You know, it's really secret. It's top of its range bombsite that's being used. And you get some good shots of the bombardier of Buck's, is it Buck's plane? I think it's Buck's plane, the one that Crosby's on. He uses it, and you see him take control of the aircraft, and then you do the bombing. Then he flicks a little.
The flicking of the switches and the close-ups and the way it's all shot is really effective.
Lovely, lovely. And then be more Norden bits later on. Yeah. So that brings us into the final thoughts of episode 2.
I will say that I did like the bike race as well.
The ending bike race is very fun.
And the fact that it started by a guy firing a 1911 into the ceiling is great.
It's good. He's like drunkenly firing it, you know. Really nice. I like that. But it shows the sort of play hard, work hard, play harder aspect of the bomber crews. I mean, that was with the USAAF and the RAF. You know, they both would work bloody hard in the raids and doing their job, then they would have these massive benders. I think in Masters of the Air, the book, there's a bit at the start where they say, you know, some of them even went down to Bournemouth on R&R for a few days and had this massive like seaside holiday bender. And then they went back and did their missions. So I like that. You know, it shows the camaraderie between all the characters. You know, they really feel, it doesn't feel like a room full of Hollywood actors in a room full of extras. It all feels like this one cohesive unit, and I really it's one thing I think Masters of the Air does well. They feel like they're all on one nucleus. They feel like they're all on one goal. I really like how it does that. Yet again, I think the pacing of the episode's very, very good.
Yeah,
there's no slowdown.
It's well shot. It's well directed.
Yeah,
it's
again,
you know, there's depth of feel to it. So you can look at a scene and you'll see things in the foreground, things in the background, and the set dressing is pretty good. There's a depth to it, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we haven't even talked great depth about Curtis's crash landing, which is interesting. But you know, see that because it's really, really well done.
It's the visual effects are great. It's the tension of it is very well constructed. Yeah.
And obviously Curtis riding his luck again. You know, he did it in the first episode, does it in the second episode, just manages to get that B-17 over that cliff edge.
Absolutely destroys that house's...
Yeah, that poor allotment.
Yeah, and the shed gone.
And there's a good line about when he's on the phone to Egan, or I think it's Cleven, when he's saying, he's chatting to the Scottish, I think it was a policeman that was in the house with them.
Yeah,
and he goes, "Oh, I'm Irish, and the Scottish guy's like, no, you're not. It's like, "Well, I'm from New York, but my family are Irish." And I like that little exchange on the phone. It really made me chuckle. But no, yet again, you know, it's another solid episode of Masters of the Air there, and you know, we really hope you're enjoying it. We hope you're enjoying these mini review episodes, because you know, we're just so excited to be able to finally be able to be talking about it. And yeah, do keep it Fighting on Film for all your war movie reviews. Do follow us on X, where you can, you know, catch up on the show, find out about all the new episodes that are coming out, and get
Instagram,
involved.
Facebook, and fightingonfilm.com, and Patreon as well, of course. You can support the show.
Yeah, keep the mics on.
We're going to have a couple of brilliant guests coming up over the next few weeks to talk to us about the show, some directly involved, some with considerable expertise.
So yeah, Matt's completely right there. We've got some amazing specials coming up. We've got a interview with Hattie Hearn at the IWM Duxford, and she'll be talking to us all about the real history of the 8th Bomb Group, of the 8th Air Force in England in the Second World War. And we've got some great questions from our patrons to ask her. And then with none other than military advisor legend Dale Dye. If you know your war movies, you'll know Dale Dye's name. He's been in, he was in Platoon. He was the senior military advisor on Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers, The Pacific, and now Masters of the Air. And we are super excited to have him on again.
Thrilled. Can't wait.
Absolutely thrilled. So,
as Rob said, the best way to learn about these guests that are coming up, and the best way to guarantee that if we have the opportunity to ask them some questions, we always try and get Patreon questions put to our guests. So if you know, if you support the show, then you're almost guaranteed to be able to get a question to a guest like Dale or Hattie. And of course, we really appreciate support of the show.
Yeah, please do. Please do support the show if you can. So yes, yet again, that was Masters of the Air, episode 2. Look out for episode 3 review when it drops. Well, episode 3 is out on February the 2nd. So do join us again for episode 3 for our review of that one. And we really hope you're enjoying Masters of the Air. And don't forget, you can get 10% off at checkout on airfix.com by using the code FOFFPODCAST, all capital letters, at checkout for some money off some model kits. So we'll catch you again next time. All that's left to say is thanks for listening. And we'll catch you again soon. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, guys. Thanks for listening.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.